Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Cal Calabrese joins us every Monday at one, at Friday. I'm lost. Every Friday, 1 o'clock. Carl, thank you for your time. I'm watching the transcripts as they're coming out in real time of the Friday New York State Supreme Court case with Donald Trump. David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, he's not being cross-examined by Trump's people. Here's what he's admitted so far. He's admitted to doing catch-and-kill stories for Arnold Schwarzenegger without ever meeting Arnold Schwarzenegger or even knowing that the information got back to Arnold Schwarzenegger, meaning he would say, I've got a bad story, someone would pay him, and the story would go away. He also admits to doing it to elected officials in New York State. Now, let's just say the ratio of Democrats in New York City are a little bit higher than Republicans. If this is the standard that we're going after catch and kill of elected officials, my God, I mean, the Bragg is going to be busy for the next 3 years, right?
Well, he also did it for Rahm Emanuel, who was the chief of staff for Obama. And by the way, David, you know, the prosecution here is waving all kinds of shiny objects that have nothing to do with the case. There is nothing illegal about catch and kill. It may be unsavory, but it's not illegal. And Trump wasn't charged with that. It's the same with non-disclosure agreements. It may be unsavory, but they're not illegal. And, you know, that's not what he is charged with. So, I mean, it's they don't have much of a case and they know it. And you can tell they don't because of the number of liberal, you know, men and women of the left who've written op-ed pieces and gone on television and admitted so as much that it really is a weak case that they never should be in the courts. And they're kind of lamenting that of all the cases to bring up before the election, this was probably the worst and the weakest for the Democrats to pursue. But it's still New York City. It's still a jury pool taken from a population that 87% voted for Joe Biden. With those odds, you would think one of the 12 might be a Trump voter. And, you know, all you need is one to get a hung jury. So we'll see. But this is a weak case. If this guy Pecker was their star witness, I mean that says a lot about just how weak this case is.
You know, then we've got the Supreme Court of the United States right now, Carl Calabrese, and they're talking about immunity. And, you know, from the pundits and the historians, the Supreme Court has literally gone since the inception of the Supreme Court to avoid this. This is something that was already assumed. There was some sort of immunity. You can only go after certain issues. No one went after Andrew Johnson after he escapes impeachment. No one decides to charge him. No one goes after U.S. Grant with any of the allegations made during his administration. Frank LaPierce had a manslaughter charge against him. Right. There was a mindset that the president was a different citizen. And by the way, the special counsel's attorney all but admitted that. And I'm looking at these questions and I'm just seeing reluctant justices that really want to, you know, put a ripple through all of our Constitution. But it appears that this Democratic Party today is all about, you know, changing things up. And we want the Supreme Court to rule on immunity.
Well, remember, the basis of this is that the progressives don't have much respect for the Constitution to begin with. I mean, they think it's outdated, antiquated, needs a major radical change to meet the modern times and modern problems. I mean, that's been the progressive position since the days of Woodrow Wilson. But yeah, you're right. The court has avoided this issue. And frankly, it's been easy for them to avoid because, David, no president has ever been charged criminally. So it's never been an issue. Now, what's interesting is I believe it was 1972, there was a case, Nixon versus Fitzgerald, which the court said that a president acting within his powers, within his office, had complete, absolute immunity to the outer perimeters. That was the term used in the court case, in the decision, to the outer perimeters of his or her powers for civil matters. So it had absolute immunity against civil litigation for obvious reasons. I mean, you know, everybody and their cousin could be bringing civil lawsuits against the president of the United States, tying up a president, you know, for an entire term. And so there's precedent here for total immunity from a civil case. Now, criminal is a little different. The position of the prosecution, the government here, is that a president is like anybody else. No difference, should be treated like anybody else. And you know, their argument is, well, if the president got in an argument with a staff member and strangled to death that staff member, would the president be immune? Obviously, no. But it's also, I think, unrealistic to say that a president is just like everybody else and should have no immunity. So I think given this court, and especially given John Roberts' style and history, he's going to try to find the middle ground. He's going to try to split the baby and say, there is immunity, and again, it's got to be broad, and the Supreme Court has already used that term, the outer perimeters of a president's powers. It's going to be broad powers, but it's not going to be unlimited to cover murder and things like that. So I think that's what we're going to end up seeing come June in a decision from the court. It's going to be a split-the-baby decision, and we'll go from there.
Well, here's what happens. Jonathan Turley at Fox suggested a fourth option, which is, you know, the president is immune from everything. The president is not immune to anything. And then the other one was limited immunity. But the fourth option was kick it back to the lower court. Let them decide what they want the scope to be. And that all but kills Jack Smith entirely from getting at Trump before the election.
You're right. That is the fourth option, to kick it back and try to put some meat on the bones of that term, outer perimeters of a president's jurisdictions and powers. And that could be the course they go as well. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Chief Justice Roberts negotiates this out with the three liberals on the court. You know, will they go for a split the baby decision? Yes, there's some immunity, but it's not unlimited. Or do we kick it back and get more guidance from the lower courts? I think he could go either way, given his history as Chief Justice.
Now, that's all on the table. And meanwhile, we had a State of the County address from Mark Poloncarz. We had a debate with Tim Kennedy and Gary Dixon in New York 26. And by the way, got way too many emails on this topic. Lynn Dixon, Gary Dixon, totally different spellings, different people, not family, not related or married. So I wanted to set that record straight. But neither here nor there. When we look at this issue on college campuses, I mean, I after the horror of what the region went through at Tops, the state went full 150 miles an hour. We'll give you a lesson on hate. We're going to go after gun companies. We're going to go after the following things, but we're going to weaponize the state police to also get online and stop these purveyors that are poisoning these young people's minds. Hey, listen, maybe the white supremacy, the Bidens and the FBIs we're talking about, it actually is true. And the white supremacy is now at UB North because I see a bunch of white kids talking about killing Jews. What's Kathy Hochul? What's Mark Poloncarz? Byron Brown? What are Democrats in Erie and New York State going to do about the very real problem of hatred and something that they're sponsoring?
Well, so far they've been very quiet, if not silent, on it. They're scared. They're scared of their own left wing. It's especially true of Biden. because of the electoral consequences of Arab Americans, especially in the state of Michigan. But yeah, I think they are scared of their own left wing, and they're treading very, very lightly on this. You know, David, I was thinking, every once in a while, events kind of come to the fore that open our eyes on forces and dynamics that have been going on under our noses and under the radar screen. I think we saw it during COVID when we were in Zoom school, and you know, for the first time, parents were able to see and hear exactly what was being taught to their children in the classroom, and they didn't like it. It was, you know, a left-wing, very sexualized, pro-gay, pro-transgender agenda, and they didn't like it, and there's been a lot of pushback on that. We saw it again with the Black Lives Matter summer, and many, many commentators, you know, picked out that, geez, so many of these protesters are young women. You know, what's going on here? Well, now we see it again at this campus issue. And I think what has now become apparent is that these types of issues that come up, whether it be the George Floyd issue or now the Gaza war issue, it attracts all kinds of groups that all share one thing in common. They're anti-American and they're anti-Western civilization and Western civilization values. And these issues attract all of these groups like manure attracts flies. And they all come in, and I'll use that term the left uses, they're all the intersectionality. They all share the one thing in common: disdain for America, disdain for Western values and traditions. And it brings them out like flies. And that's what we're seeing. We saw it with the George Floyd summer, and now we're seeing it with the Gaza summer or the Gaza spring.
So let's just say that the summer of 2020, George Floyd's death, it all occurs. The only difference is that South Africa is being run by Boers, apartheid Afrikaners that are white and in the minority. If we start trucking in 300, 400,000 white South African apartheid people and start placing them all throughout the country, I think people would have issues with that. I think that if your mindset is the destruction of a group of people, whether they be trans, gay, Catholic, communist, fascist, black, white, or Jew, that you probably wouldn't want that in an immigrant population where Jewish people already are citizens of the United States. Well, why is that not an issue with the immigration that we're bringing
in? It should be, but it should also be an issue about our own kids and what they're learning in schools and what they're being indoctrinated with in schools. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a young lady interviewed yesterday about Gaza, and she was almost clueless on basic questions. And finally, she admitted, this was at Columbia. She said, "I need to be better educated." Well, you're going to a school that charges you $65,000-$70,000 a year of tuition. Why aren't you being educated? The answer is you're being indoctrinated. But so we're putting up with this kind of anti-American, anti-Western values with immigrants, and we're putting up with it with our own kids, many of whom, you know, graduated from college 20, 25 years ago, who are now in leadership positions in business, foundations, not-for-profits, media, entertainment, big tech. And we're seeing the results of that takeover now. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable with it. I don't know where it stops. I don't know how we stop it, other than it's going to take a major effort and it's going to take years to undo what we've allowed to happen, both with our immigration system and now with our own education system.
The 143rd Assembly District, represented by Monica Wallace, a Democrat, Maryvale is in that district, and she's kind of going at the Superintendent D'Angelo of Maryvale right now about, well, where's the New York City money coming that was promised? And almost to imply that, like, Sweet Home does it cheaper, which, be careful, Brian Culpa, I think we might have to move all the migrants to Amherst. They seem to do it cost effectively. I don't know what the argument is being made here, but D'Angelo, the superintendent, I mean, the guy is trying his best to be politically correct. He's jumping through all the, you know, liberal hoops he has to, and talk about, you know, my life is better because I have migrants in my school. And yet the reality is, this is costing us $800,000 and it's counting. When is New York going to do their thing? Did New York make a deal with Western New York, and they didn't have the money when they made the deal? Because that's fraudulent. Or are our representatives such rubes, they want us to believe this was their idea, but the reality is our county executive just wants to be friends with people in power. He's looking for a gig. And he just made a deal because that's what made the overlords in his party happy. I mean, something's got to give here, right?
Yeah. I don't know if there was a deal made. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was. But, I mean, look, every year, I can't remember a year where school districts got their aid cut, what's called foundational aid. It always goes up. And the assemblywoman is arguing that, well, you got $1.7 million more in foundational aid, so what's your problem? That more than covers your cost. I mean, the school district would have gotten that just to cover, you know, negotiated contract increases and utility costs increase and food costs increase and everything else. That's what they use that money for. They were promised, New York City promised, they would cover the cost of the immigrant education. You would slice that away, and that would be, they'd be, local school districts would be held harmless. New York City would pick that up, and then you would get this increased foundational aid that you expect to get every year anyways for all of those other non-immigrant related costs. That didn't happen. And the assemblywoman basically is saying, well, money is fungible. Take your money, we got you, and use it for immigrants. Well, fine, but then you can't use it for utilities, food, books, salary increases, negotiated salary increases. And so it's just, it's a pretty weak argument in my opinion. But again, the Democrat Party is kind of wedded to this open borders. Let's accept the immigrants. It's a sign of our strength, our diversity, and let's ignore the consequences. And eventually you can't say that anymore. Eventually the consequences hit you right between the eyes. And they're going to continue to hit us right between the eyes. And more of these unvetted immigrants, illegal immigrants, come into our country, get resettled. And, you know, they broke the law once by coming into this country. You're going to see even more of it in other areas of law enforcement.
Gary Dixon debated Tim Kennedy in New York 26 on Channel 4, WIVB. And honestly, I got to tell you, debates, whether you put early voting's going on anyway before the debate, people voting before they can make up their mind, however much you weight you put on a debate. But Carl Calabrese, for everything that everyone's talked about Tim Kennedy, that this guy can raise money, that he's a darling, everyone loves him. Look, Sean Ryan's a firecracker who battles and talks about these issues. Policarz knows issues and talks about issues. You might disagree with them, but they're fighters. I was absolutely blown away by how wildly out of over his skis Tim Kennedy appeared to be with Gary Dixon. I mean, Gary Dixon was calm, relaxed, talking about these issues with nuance, talking about the district, and Kennedy sounded like Rachel Maddow. It was just talking point after talking point. What did you make of that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I heard your analysis, and I agreed with it. It was all talking points. I'm going to oppose MAGA extremists. I'm going to push for social justice and gun control and abortion. And, those are the Democrat left's talking points. But if you're Tim Kennedy in a district that's over 2-1 Democrat, your goal in a debate is just do no harm. OK, don't make a big mistake. And you very seldom make a mistake by repeating talking points. You may not win the debate by the scorecard of a high school or college debate judge, but that doesn't matter. You did not make a big mistake. The debate was a one-day story. Nobody's talking about it 2 or 3 days later. You haven't been put on the defensive. You didn't give your opponent anything to latch onto and put you in the wrong. And so from that standpoint, it was a successful debate. Wasn't very successful if people wanted to get educated on the nuances and the complexity of the issues, hearing it from the right and hearing it from the left. You didn't get that. Dixon did a very good job of explaining issues, getting into detail on issues, the policy details. Kennedy did not have to do that, and he didn't.
And I'll tell you, Gary Dixon's abortion talking point, I've been sending that everywhere in the RNC just to say, listen, this guy just parried the abortion issue and backed the Supreme Court decision, saying, hey, states make their decision. They make their decision. There shouldn't be a federal canonization one side or the other. The Supreme Court said it's a 10th Amendment issue. States vote what the state wants. They get no reason to muddy the Constitution up with codifying anything. And it took the issue away. It completely takes the power away from people that want to make abortion front and center in 24. I thought Gary Dixon was brilliant in that.
Yeah, it has bothered a lot of people, me included, that conservatives for decades argued that the Supreme Court overreached with the Roe decision. And this, there's nothing in the Constitution about abortion. Therefore, the Constitution is clear. If something is not given to the federal government as a power, it belongs to the states. And so conservatives argued that for decades, that this should be a state issue. That's what this court ruled. And then, you know, immediately Lindsey Graham files a bill to make a national ban on abortion after 15 weeks. I had a problem with that. The real problem here is not that it's gone to the states. The real problem is the Republican Party and the conservative movement are either afraid to talk about abortion or don't know how to talk about abortion. Because the real extreme position of the two parties in place today is the Democrat position, which is unrestricted abortion through 9 months of pregnancy, literally right up to the time of birth. That is a extremely unpopular position. By the time you get to the third trimester of a pregnancy, only about 27% of Americans say they favor abortion at that point. And Republicans have to learn how to talk about it. David, I know a lot about this issue because when I was running for office at the town level, we had the Right to Life Party in New York State. And I had their endorsement every time I ran. And I had to deal with people's questions at the door about my position as a pro-life Republican. And where we are today is...
It's a big deal.
Where we are today is the American people are comfortable with 12 to 15-week restriction with exceptions for the life of the mother, rape, and incest. That is a popular position, and you win elections with that. Now, the problem is, if you're pro-life, you say, wait a minute, you know, that's still... killing a baby, and that is true. But if you don't take the first down, if every time you have the ball, you're going for the Hail Mary pass, what happens is you more than often lose. And when you lose in this business, you elect a pro-abortion Democrat who's in favor of 9 months of abortion. So I tell people, look, if we win with a 12 to 15-week bill, with those three exceptions, we don't stop there. The pro-life movement continues. You've made a first down. Now you have possession for another four downs. And you continue to move the ball. That's what the left does on so many issues. It's not the end of the game. It's just the beginning of the game. But at least you stop pro-choice, nine-month abortion advocates on the Democrat side from getting elected. Because if we continue to lose on this issue, that's what you're electing. So you've got to work some practicality into this position. Abortion is more than a legal issue. In the final analysis, it's an issue of the heart. If you're going to stop abortions, you've got to change people's hearts. And laws don't do that very well. They help, but they don't do it all. So I tell my pro-life friends, and I am pro-life, you've got to take what you can get today and continue to move the ball with the idea of changing people's hearts.
And that's not what Lindsey Graham did, and that's not what a lot of faux conservatives did, because they made a spectacle of themselves and took an issue away that I think really cost us in 2022 as a party. Carl Calabrese, he's right as always, and we appreciate him. Carl, thank you for your time.
Thank you, David. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too, sir. We come back. Gary Dixon from New York 26 is going to be on the show. We're going to talk to him. Reached out to Senator Tim Kennedy. He refused, but we offer same time to both candidates, and we'll continue to do that. Gary Dixon will come on in the next segment, and Tim Kennedy's more than welcome to accept that down the road so that we are, keeping fair time with both candidates. Legally, our responsibility. We come back, Gary Dixon, running for Congress, New York 26, right after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All-star. star closer, Kenley Jansen. We have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.